It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. In a speech last month in Arizona, President Joe Biden apologized for the federal government's 150-year history of running abusive boarding schools for Native American children. He called it a blot on American history.
I formally apologize as President of the United States of America for what we did. I formally apologize.
Thousands of children experienced abuse, neglect, and forced assimilation. That legacy was passed on through generations. As a warning, this conversation includes details of those abusive conditions.
Mary Annette Pember writes about her mother's experience at one of these institutions here in Wisconsin in a forthcoming book called Medicine River. Pember is a national correspondent for ICT News and a citizen of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Mary, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
And Travis Miller is here, treasurer for the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition. Travis is a member of the Stockbridge Muncie Band of Mohicans from North Central Wisconsin. Travis, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Travis, what feelings came up for you when you heard President Biden forcefully apologizing for the government's trauma with these boarding schools?
Oh, it was a relief to hear an apology coming from such a high level in our federal government. I think it's long overdue and something that, you know, survivors and descendants of survivors have been waiting for many years.
Mary, what was this moment like for you? What did those words mean?
Well, you know, of course, I was working as a journalist and covering it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in that capacity, I often kind of compartmentalize my feelings, but later, I mean, I did feel it was very important, and I was really struck at how he really listed the ways in which the federal government utilized the boarding schools as an act of assimilation. And I think unlike some other apologies, for instance, by the Catholic Church and the U.S. Council of Bishops, he didn't try to backpedal it at all. And I was really impressed with that.
Hmm. I want to look further, Mary, at the Interior Department led by Deb Haaland releasing that final investigative report over the summer detailing the horrific history of Indian boarding schools, federal Indian boarding schools. What is your reaction to that report? Was it thorough? What did you gain from it or see from it?
Well, I think it wasn't as thorough, certainly, as it could have been, but I think some of it speaks to just how scattered all of the kind of boarding school records are in this country. But it was a major step forward to actually, you know, expend federal resources to take a hard look at the impact of boarding schools. You know, I think the number of children that they found that, quote unquote, died, I think is far lower than the people who did actually die. There were many. We do know from other research that thousands of children were sent home before they actually died, when they were like mortally ill and died at home, and then consequently spread, often it was frequently tuberculosis-related illnesses, and then spread those to their communities. But given with the resources they have and the scattered nature of these records, I think they did a really good job. And I think it's extremely important, and it sets now a baseline, if you will, in the United States. People can no longer claim that they didn't know about this. This is like a history that was hidden, quote unquote. I mean, it's out there front and center. This is a federal report. So I think it's extremely important.
With this report, Travis, it calls for the return of lands that once housed these boarding schools and to, you know, put up memorials to the children who were separated. What do you make of these actions, and how might that land process, that land transfer take place?
So I think one of the important aspects of returning the land to the tribes that were affected by specific Indian boarding school locations, as we had earlier mentioned, the children that had passed while in the custody of these schools, these institutions, there may still be burial sites that have not been identified. There may be cultural resources held at these institutions. So when we think about the return of the land, we think about the return of, you know, what comes with that land.
We're talking about the legacy of Native American boarding schools with Mary Annette Pember. She's a journalist, author, and citizen of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. And Travis Miller, treasurer for the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition and member of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohicans. I would like to turn to your personal stories. And Mary, you have a forthcoming book that follows the story of your mother, who was forced to attend one of these schools. Can you explain to us a bit about what your mother's experience was like?
Yes, she went to school there, you know, in the 30s, and it was a difficult time. It was during the Great Depression. We found that many people, you know, their Native people's lands and resources were so diminished by many of these policies in the late 19th century that people often were forced to utilize boarding schools as a way to survive. And that was really kind of what happened. My mother's family, her parents broke up and there was really no place for them to go. And although traditionally Ojibwe families would normally take children of parents who were indisposed in some way, unfortunately, that tradition really had been dismantled, you know, by these economic policies. And so they were forced to go to what they called it then the sister schools, St. Mary's Indian boarding schools on the Bad River Reservation in Ordena, Wisconsin. For her, it was, you know, she often spoke about the sister school and just the real emotional and physical pain of attending the school. And I think it was, you know, sort of a trauma and a subsequent PTSD that she never really fully recovered from. And she talked to me as a child. It was sort of my fairy tales, if you will. And I think she often kind of cleaned them up a little bit so that she would often come out on top, you know, for my benefit. But I was always very aware of the impact of the sister school on her. And in many ways, you know, she passed on a torch, if you will, for me to tell her story. She placed me on this quest, you know, that I was really imbued with this duty to tell her story. And I mean, she was well aware that most people didn't know about this. So I've always known about the sister school.
How did your mother's experience affect your relationship with her?
Well, she was, as I said, she was, you know, at that time we didn't know about PTSD and the impacts of trauma. And she clearly, you know, suffered from the effects of that. And she had difficulty parenting us, you know, and expressing love and affection. And she was also sort of this hyper-vigilant person. You know, living with her was kind of like walking on eggshells all the time. And we were guilty for some transgression, you know, we didn't know of. So as I grew older, I came to see that there was obviously something going on that went far deeper than anything about our relationship together. And that motivated me to take a deep dive into why she was the way that she was, which, you know, I think it helped inform me and gave me some authority over what drove her to behave the way that she had behaved. I was speaking with Denise Lajmadeer, who's actually also works for the Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition and has written extensively about her parents' boarding experience. And Denise said, you know, once she learned about what happened to her parents and what happened to them, she had to forgive them. And I think that for me this story is very much about my journey to understanding and forgiveness of her.
Travis, how has your family been affected by the boarding schools? What would you be able to share?
I'm a descendant of multiple grandparents who have attended boarding schools. My grandfather, my mom's dad. So he attended the Lutheran Mission School on the Stockbridge-Munsee Reservation. And he was one of the last groups of children to be sent there before its closure. And although he only attended for a few years, I believe, between the ages of 6 and 10 years old, I can tell how it affected him. I really think it diminished his sense of tribal identity, that pride that a lot of us hold as tribal people. He didn't have that. And it used to really bother me when I was young, because I grew up you know, although his experience kind of put him in a place where culture wasn't a priority for him. So my mother grew up without that. She grew up, you know, missing that part of her identity. She really made it a point to make sure that her children, myself included, were always immersed in our culture, in our ceremonies. So I grew up with that. And I remember as a kid thinking, man, how come my grandpa doesn't participate? You know, how come he doesn't even support our participation in either cultural activities or ceremonial activities? And as I got older, into my teenage years, I really started participating even heavier, you know, in our ceremonies. And I would want to talk to my grandfather about it. Me and him always had a really good relationship. He would come pick me up every day during the summers, pick me up, and without any real type of plan, we'd just drive around the res, you know, listen to his old country music, laugh, hang out, go visit other relatives. You know, so I had a close relationship with him, but not being able to feel like I could share that experience, you know, those cultural experiences, ceremonial experiences with him, as I got into my teenage years, really started to negatively impact our relationship, because, you know, these things were so important to me. And there were times where he would make jokes about it, you know, make jokes about our ceremonies or the things that we did, poke fun at them. And that at the time really hurt me. And, you know, as I grew and matured and started understanding more of this history, boarding school policy history, and, you know, the impacts it had on him, it really allowed me to, you know, look at it from a different perspective. There were times when I would get upset, you know, you'd make jokes and I would get upset. It's definitely been part of my healing as well, you know, understanding, you know, what he went through, what his father went through. I have so many of my grandparents, you know, experienced the Indian boarding schools. And I think probably with a lot of the same outcomes, really diminishing their sense of personhood as a tribal person. And, you know, that trickles down from generation to generation and really impacts the preservation of your cultural practices, your beliefs, your worldviews. So I experienced that throughout my life, you know, as a secondhand survivor, a descendant of many survivors of the boarding school policies.
Mary and Travis, thank you so much for sharing those deeply personal stories and giving us more of a glimpse into the effects of these schools. Travis, I want to move on to the Healing Coalition and the work it's doing in collecting the oral histories from boarding school survivors and their families. Can you talk about this work and where it's going?
Yeah, so the Oral History Project, so NABS, when I say NABS, I'm talking about the coalition. NABS has accepted a grant from the Department of Interior to conduct video interviews with Indian boarding school survivors across the United States with the purpose to create a permanent oral history record and collection. NABS has built trust with multiple American Indian and Alaskan Native communities and are working to collect survivors' stories in a healing-informed way. So this is allowing the survivors of the boarding schools to really tell their story from their perspective. And our mission is to collect these stories. You know, our relatives that have attended these schools, they're getting older. We're losing people every day that have attended these schools. So in an effort to, you know, really preserve this history, we are collecting the survivor stories.
Mary, are these oral histories, do you think they are a healing step?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I just do want to say this. There's been a lot of emphasis in the media on quote unquote healing. Mm-hmm. And like people want to jump to that very quickly. But healing needs to be preceded by truth. And I think really in many ways, that's the area that these histories occupy is truth. People do have the opportunity to express that truth, their personal truth. And then the American public needs to hear it. You know, we look to our relatives in the north there in Canada. They spent a great deal of time also collecting people's stories, you know, and they started the work in 2008 and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I remember speaking to Chief Willie Littlechild, who was a commissioner on that commission. And he said that they had done a poll looking at the awareness that the Canadian public had of residential schools. And they thought that perhaps 2% of people were aware. By the time it was all finished, they did another poll and found that over 50% of the Canadian public was aware of the residential school history. And I think that's something that this collection and awareness of these histories really contributes to the public's knowledge of this history of their own countries.
There are now schools around the country that teach Native American languages and culture. Travis, what do you think the future looks like for teaching Native American languages and culture and trying not to lose any more, especially of the language?
Yeah, I really love to see the increase in language programs, schools that are providing Indigenous language courses and curriculum. I love seeing that. It's been something that has definitely strengthened the preservation of language. We see multiple immersion schools throughout the country popping up. And I think the future, I think we see more of these schools coming into fruition. And maybe more federal funding to support these initiatives for language. Mary had mentioned earlier about Canada's Truth and Healing or Truth and Reconciliation Commission. One of the things that NABS is advocating for right now is a Truth and Healing Commission on Indian Boarding School Policies Act. And with these type of initiatives, if we could get this bill passed, we have Senate Bill 1723, House Bill 7227. If we could get initiatives passed like this, we're really going to see, I think, an increase in the increase of culturally responsive schooling for our Native children.
Mary and Travis, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for having us, Kate.
Mary Annette Pember is a journalist and author of the forthcoming book, Medicine River. She is a citizen of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. Travis Miller is treasurer for the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition and a member of the Stockbridge Muncie Band of Mohicans from north central Wisconsin.